Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
St. Louis's Traffic and Weather Station, News Radio 1120, KMOX.
We've been listening to officials in Washington, D.C. give an update on the deadly mid-air collision in Virginia just outside.
Salvage operations are underway this morning to remove the plane's fuselage from the Potomac River.
The focus is on recovering the airliner first.
Search crews hope that will allow them access areas they haven't been able to reach and bring some closure to the victims' families.
Michael Kelly, Amy Markscore is with you. And of course, we were all following the tragic story of the American Airlines flight and the helicopter that collided in Washington, D.C., landed in the Potomac River. And the rescue effort soon turned into a recovery effort as all of those aboard that American Airlines flight and the helicopter did perish. And it brought up some questions that I guess I had never thought deeply about before, and that is the perils and the complications of a swift water rescue, especially when it's dark, when it's cold. And to give us some more information on what first responders are dealing with in a situation like that is Sergeant Kurt Merciel. He is a dive team leader. And Sergeant Merciel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
I guess my first question is, how do you begin a recovery effort like the one we saw in the Potomac River where it's dark, it's a swift current, there's jet fuel and metal? You jump in the water, and where do you go with that?
Yeah, there's a very complicated operation that many challenges that they're faced with there. You know, once you make the transition from rescue to recovery, you know, safety then becomes a priority and everything slows down. So the first thing you want to do at that point is let's get a good assessment. Let's really understand the situation. And so you know what the teams are getting into, and that way you're not rushing into something. And you don't want to rush into it for many reasons. First off, it's unsafe. But two, everything needs to be documented, all the evidence involved in a crash, and the investigators need every piece of evidence if they're going to be able to successfully understand what caused the crash and how it could have been mitigated. So it starts with a good assessment.
I guess my first question then, actually, I'll back up. What about when it's still a rescue? What are you doing to speed up that process?
Yeah, you know, in an area like that, they have many resources that are on standby for such an event, and it's an all-call event. You know, you try to get as many personnel in the area, as many assets to flood, and time is of the essence. I mean, you're talking about water that's in the low 40s. Survival time in that environment is minutes, very limited. So you try to flood the area as fast as possible with personnel, and you're looking for any signs of life.
Yeah, Sergeant, and as we all watched this unfold over the last couple of weeks, we talked, heard a lot about the training that goes into this. How do you train for something that's like this? And is training also learning from what's happening right before us right now?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Whenever you look at, you know, how you operate, your operating procedures, how you equip, you know, how you devise your risk management strategy and the training that's going to support that, you have to look at other operations and try to learn from them. So there's no doubt that, you know, me as the dive team leader for the Highway Patrol, I'm paying attention to that and trying to study. And at some point, there will be lessons learned that come out from that. And everyone in the industry will be, you know, interested and will study that. But as far as training, it's something that is, it happens all the time. I'm actually on a training operation today where we're doing panic-proof training. And it's something that critical to operate in an environment that those divers are operating, because they were called to operate where they couldn't see. You know, the visibility in the water is essentially zero. That if it's not, once they start moving things around, it gets stirred up and they can't see. And the water's so cold that their exposure time is limited, and they have to have significant amount of insulation on, exposure suits, and that reduces mobility and dexterity. So now everything becomes even more difficult in a very difficult environment. So, like what we're doing today as far as panic proofing, you know, when we're in that environment and we're getting entangled into wires and cables that you would see in a crash like this, where, you know, airframes come apart, there's tons of debris, sharp metal, all kinds of things that, you know, can entrap you, harm you, damage equipment. And to be able to operate in an environment, you have to be able to control your emotions, slow everything down. And so when you do get entrapped or entangled, it's like, okay, I expected this. I knew it was going to happen. And now I have a thought process, and my training has prepared me for this. Because one of the greatest fears for a diver and the greatest risk is to panic. If you're in that environment, as long as you have air, you have time, and you're fine, as long as you don't panic. But if your emotions get ahead of you, and now you're hyperventilating and you're not thinking, you're actually trying to flee the situation, then you get further entrapped, and eventually you lose an air source, and it can easily become, you know, consequential. So yeah. Training is ongoing. It's not just the, you know, the art of diving. I mean, that's kind of an elementary thing that we have to master. But like for us today, we're doing at least once a year, we put ourselves through a panic program where we are pushing those emotions. We're operating underwater without access to the surface and losing air source. And that's a very emotional event. But after you learn to realize that, hey, I do have a substantial amount of time that I can think and operate before, you know, I lose consciousness. And so, yeah, training, many steps to it, but that's one that we're actually addressing today.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that goes against everything your body would be telling you to do. You know, you have to calm those emotions. You mentioned having no visibility. So something like the crash in the Potomac, are rescuers quite literally blind when they're underwater and feeling, just literally going by feel?
Yeah, having not been on scene, you know, I look at it and I'm estimating that, you know, they have just less than a foot of visibility.
Wow.
But as soon as you start moving things around, now that goes to zero. So, yes, you're operating without any visibility whatsoever. And at that point, you have to slow all movements. You become very deliberate. You feel your way through things. And it's critical that you understand what the situation is, what piece of evidence you're going for. Like, if you're going to rig something, it's like, hey, what does it look like? What does it feel like? And that may mean that you go to an airfield and you actually practice, you rehearse onto a similar airframe or something. But you try to prepare that diver as much as possible for what they're about to feel under the water. And when they get under, now granted, it's going to be damaged, it's going to be different, but they have somewhat of an idea. And when you can't see, it's and you get used to it, it's like every part of your body becomes a sensor. You feel your way through it. You know, you feel when something rubs against your leg, and you can almost identify what it is. You start to visualize. But the important part is you have to be comfortable in that environment, and you have to have the support and the equipment and the training. Otherwise, it's going to be very dangerous.
Yeah, and then also with the equipment, I guess, is that specialized to protect the divers from very toxic substances like jet fuel? I mean, you're diving into jet fuel.
You know, jet fuel is definitely an issue. I would think that would have been mitigated right off. You know, it will make its way to the surface. You either catch it or you move it from the area. Normally, if we have fuel on the surface, enough fuel that we're worried about ignition, we will not enter the water. We're going to do something to change that environment, whether we actually catch it with, you know, floats, and we can move it, or we can absorb it, or you take a boat, you know, the thrust of a boat, and you can actually move it. Here, the current, I think, is going to do most of that work for you. So, yeah, you're going to have to mitigate that issue before you put divers in.
God forbid some type of tragedy like this were to happen in Missouri. Obviously, your organization, Sergeant Kurt Marcil, how big is your dive team, and how many missions are you all having to do on a yearly basis in Missouri?
Yeah, so we're currently staffed with 12 divers. Two of us are full-time divers. The rest are highway patrol members that work different functions within the agency. We normally try to keep 14 on the team. Is a good operating number. We would definitely be involved in an operation like this. And the one that One where we did work with NTSB and the Coast Guard was when the duck tragedy happened on Table Rock Lake. Very different than this one, but many of the same moving pieces. And the moving pieces is another one of the challenges that you face because, you know, when you're used to working with certain groups, you figure out systems. You have habitual relationships and understandings of how you operate. But when you bring in elements, external elements, then it forms a new challenge.
Yeah, and it seems like you would need strong expertise to do this job. Is your team members from across the state and you assemble as needed, or are you all based in Jefferson City, Columbia?
Oh, yeah, so we're spread throughout the state. We have members in basically all major areas of the state. And when an event comes, you know, when our services are needed, we go to wherever it's at. What we found is trying to staff it in a centralized location. It's hard to actually staff that team. It's easier to find expertise and just have them, you know, travel to wherever it's needed.
Yeah, and if you're in a body of water like the Mississippi River, massive and swift water flow, how do you determine how far downstream you have to go that a body could be swept or evidence?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, there's no real scientific answer to that. I mean, that's one of our greatest challenges, and we're always trying to accumulate information. But it comes down to a best estimate. And, you know, you look at current speed, you look at water temperature. There's many factors, you know, the composition of the bottom. But there is no hard answer to it. And unfortunately, where they're at, you know, the water is so cold, it affects how a body's going to react in the water. You know, warm water, a victim is going to surface much sooner than in cold water. So it's going to draw out the process of victim recovery due to the temperature.
Well, Sergeant Kurt Merciel, we're so grateful for all of the work you and your team do. And I'm sure that some of the rescues you've had to do, that some of these disasters or tragedies could be prevented. What would you want people to know to help keep themselves and their families safe?
Yeah, I can't speak on aircraft safety, but as far as the waters in Missouri, you know, most of what we deal with is drownings, boat accidents, and stuff like that. First off is always wear a life jacket when you're out on the water or around the water. Definitely limit or have no alcohol consumption. Those are two of the major contributing factors to our fatalities. And slow your pace. Enjoy the day, but don't push the limits.
That is Sergeant Kurt Merciel. Thank you so much for your time and information today. And, of course, for all the work you do. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Hey, thank you, guys. And everybody be safe out there.
Thank you so much.